Good morning, diners and travelers of the world. Welcome to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig.
Another week, another program.
Yeah, well, you said you were going to tell everybody what we're doing right now.
Oh,
right,
was I going to do that?
Yes.
Okay, well, it's a pleasure sometimes for On the Menu to be able to celebrate a success story in our hometown of Pittsburgh, and we have the opportunity to do that at the start of today's program.
On the Menu is on our very first venture into the Capitol Grill in downtown Pittsburgh, speaking to a chef who's very special to us, Chef Donato Coluccio. We followed him through a number of restaurants, and he's truly what people refer to as a chef's chef. Put yourself in his hands and just trust what he will produce. Thanks for having us here, Chef.
Thank you for coming. I'm so excited you're here, and I'm flattered by those kind words that you speak of me. Thank you.
Well, I hear that it's so successful, this restaurant, that it's busy constantly. Is this true?
It's true. You know, we're happy to be here. We have a great team here. Everybody's personality shines. The quality of the product shines. And we're just doing the best we can do. And we want to be a big part of the city for many years to come.
Well, it's true. You have really brought almost the entire top talent of the city to work at Capitol Grill.
Thank you.
It was like old home week seeing everybody working here.
You got it.
Let's just step back a minute. And for those who don't know, Capitol Grill is a chain in the sense that there are more than one of them. But it's different also in each city, is it not?
Yes, each venue has a managing partner and a chef who, our personality goes into this place as well, along with all the other team members. And each venue is unique to the city that it's from. You know, obviously, myself and our managing partner, Rick McMaster, and sous chef Joe Bello, and Chris Ammons, and Casey, we all have our little thing going on here that makes us unique to, say, the Capitol Grill in Orlando with Randy Cook and Carmine.
It's a steakhouse, but there's more than just steak here.
Dry-aged steaks, fabulous chops, award-winning wine list, fresh seafood brought in, and then we do some local stuff, you know, whatever we can get around the area, local produce, Jamison lamb, and different items like that and whatnot.
Now, the menu is different according to the chef in all places, but also the decor is.
The decor is local paintings and portraits of local celebrities and people that made an impact on the local communities here, such as Fred Rogers, Andrew Mellon, Andrew Carnegie, Nellie Bly.
How about the stuffed heads?
The stuffed heads. That's similar in the Capitol Grill venues that you would see in most Capitol Grills. You know, our menu, we have our items that are Capitol Grill specific, and dry aged beef and main courses and some chef specialties, and then we put our own spin on some special items and like I say, different things that we do specialty wise.
And the steaks are dry aged on the premise.
Dry aged on the premise. I believe we are the only ones in Pittsburgh doing this right now. We have three private rooms. We have the wine room, the pen room, and a board room, which seats 10 people. The wine room and pen room seat 25 to 35 guests, depending on how the room is configured. So we do a lot of small gatherings, parties for different organizations.
And chef's table.
We have the chef's table over at Eagle Island, we like to call that.
He's a born teacher.
Thank you. We have the chef's table over at Eagle Island. A lot of times what I normally do is whoever's at that table, I come out and talk to the people, do a couple little custom appetizers or plates for them, and do some other stuff. You know, or if they'd like, they order right off the menu as well. Anything that anybody wants is what I do. I want to make everybody happy.
I'm just saying that there's so much buzz about this place, and all of it is positive. People love coming here. They love coming to a place, not just because it's new, but because they know they can trust it. They're going to have a wonderful meal and a wonderful experience. Now, you said you had somebody else to thank here.
Yeah, I just want to take a minute to thank all of our team members, both front and back of the house, and one key player that I forgot to mention, Megan Gilson, who's our sales and marketing manager. She really makes it happen with the
She set this whole thing up for us.
Yeah, she did. And she'll really take care of you. If there's anything, your special requests or special needs, she would be the person to contact. I just want to say that, you know, we're here. We want to satisfy everybody, make everybody as happy as possible.
I even have the number memorized. It's
412-363-9100. 338.
Oh, 338.
Well, it was
close.
That was
good. For a new number.
and
you were going to talk about complimentary valet parking.
We do offer complimentary valet parking down on 5th Avenue at our corner. We're at the corner of 5th and Wood Street. And like I say, we want people to come in here and just relax and let us, handle your group or your situation and do the best we can for you. And happy dining.
Yeah, and we also are promising listeners that we are going to jot down everything that we have, and then we'll go over the menu with you and give a report on what we've eaten at our first venture to the Capitol Grill.
There it is, live from the Capitol Grill.
On the menu, I had the good fortune just a couple of weeks ago to go to Pittsburgh's hottest new dining destination, the Capitol Grill, where we talked to Donato Coluccio, the executive chef, about what it was like opening Capitol Grill. And we said at that time, we're going to have him catch up with us after dinner so that he can go over the menu that we enjoyed. So Donato is joining us today to do just exactly that. Donato?
How you doing, Peter and Ed?
Yeah, and boy, did we enjoy it. I don't know if you remember all that you served us, but if I could mention some of the items and you can actually describe how they were served.
Sure thing, I'd love to.
Okay, well, first of all, your fresh oysters on the half shell are really special. Super briny, wonderful.
Thank you. Those are Long Island Blue Point oysters, and they come in daily, and we get those direct from the seafood house.
Yeah, no, I mean, we were told actually that a lot of Blue Points as advertised are not real, but these were real.
Yeah, they were the real deal. We will spend whatever it takes to bring the right product in, to bring the freshest product, to bring the best quality product, and we want to make sure that whoever eats those products is enjoying it 100% as much as we enjoy serving it.
And talk about the real deal.
We moved on to something you can only get in very short supply, I understand.
Kobe beef. That's correct. That is right from Kobe, Japan. And we actually bring that in, and it comes verification with a nose print of the cow, and it also comes with the bloodline traced back to the great-grandmother and great-grandfather. It's real, real good.
It was sliced thin.
Mouth. Shaved very thin. It melts in your mouth. And we did that two different ways. We did it with arugula and mustard oil. And we also did that with white truffle and truffle paste.
See, we didn't have to remind him. He knows exactly what it was. Go ahead, Donato. So what was next? Do you remember what was next?
We also served our lamb with cherry mustard. And what that is sour cherries reduced in a little bit of port with whole grain mustard, champagne mustard. And it's a little spicy, a little sweet, a little sour. It's, you know, all the tastes go together real well. And I had a 12-year balsamic drizzle around the plate.
And your signature chopped salad you skipped. Don't forget that.
Oh, the chopped salad. That's right. I forgot about that. We had our signature chopped salad with Sicilian olive vinaigrette, green olive vinaigrette. And that was done with a piece of seared
sea bass.
Seared striped bass. And that was brought in fresh with the seafood of the day. And that was just seared crispy skin, seasoned lightly with fleur de sel and black pepper. And I like our chopped salad a lot. We put a little bit of haricot vert, a little bit of fresh corn, celery, radishes, It's real crispy, a little bit of asparagus, and you know, it's a real nice, refreshing dish. And the cold of the salad goes good with the hot fish. You get that warm type thing. Real nice.
Now, you missed out another item. We insisted on having a little taste of your special steak tartare, too.
Oh, steak tartare, yes. You reminded me. It's coming back to me now.
It's all flooding back.
It's coming back. We actually use our tenderloin of beef, and we chop that by hand. It's minced real fine, about an eighth of an inch. And what we mix in there is it's a classical rendition, egg yolks, capers, sweet Vidalia onions. We also put Tabasco, Worcestershire, and a little bit of oil, mix that with the beef. That's cut to order. We like to serve that. We'll take a few beef tenderloins before the shift starts, and we'll lay those on crushed ice, thin slices, and then what we'll do is take and just mince that to order. And that also comes with toasted baguette, and that's layered with more capers and hard-boiled eggs. Real good dish.
Everything's good. I had never before had filet mignon on the bone.
Bone-in filet. That's a dry-aged filet. That comes off a short loin. It's one of my favorite items, that and the bone-in strip loin. If you ever get a chance to come here and taste that, and we have that on special, that's a good suggestion. It has a taste all of its own. You know, being the most tender cut, you just add that age to it, and it just sets it off just a little bit. It has a more pronounced flavor, and it's wonderful.
And most people like the dry-aged sirloin.
Dry-aged sirloin, another signature entree.
Which you can get in two sizes.
14-ounce and 20-ounce center-cut steaks. We cut all of our beef on hand. They're really hand-carved steaks because we take care with each cut. And our in-house meat cutter, the meat room is right in the dry age room, so it's inside of a cooler. So, I mean, we really take a lot of pride and a lot of care with the meat that we serve here.
Now, wasn't that the piece that we had left over?
Oh, yes.
We took it. You never guess what we did, because we set off the next day for Florida. So I took the leftovers and I cut it into little pieces that you could eat with your fingers. And I took it on the plane. So there we were, sitting with a cocktail on the plane to Florida.
There you go.
Eating. And it was absolutely sensational tasting beef. It was everything that you promised.
Thank you.
And you said the aging process is what does that to it, and there's absolutely no question about it.
Yeah.
I mean, how would you ever go back?
I can't go back now. I'm spoiled myself. You know, the dry aging process is what really does it. And, you know, basically, we want to age it. Ours is aged right around 21 days, but, you know, we make sure that the wind velocity and the relative humidity inside that room is just right, and the temperature is right, and it puts out a great product. And now that you remind me, since you said you had some steak juliennes on the plane, maybe I'll come up with a new item based off of that or something.
There you go. Well, I tell you what, it was as served cold, it was really absolutely as excellent as it was hot.
It was the flavor.
Now, the surprise item of the whole evening. Now, those who listen to On the Menu regularly will know that, and it's not the world's greatest eater of the after section of the menu, the dolce or the dessert. But you produced something that she just spooned right into.
The dessert.
Yeah, the dessert. What was that?
I can't remember.
It was a
I remember I ate it all.
It was a
espresso tart.
Oh, yeah, it was that espresso cake.
That was
bad. Chocolate espresso cake. It was fabulous.
She's dreaming chocolate espresso cake right now.
we serve that. It's chocolate espresso cake. We make all of our desserts in-house as well as everything else. And we have a really good pastry chef here, Julie. And she does a great job. And
I think that's one of your signatures. And then the pie we couldn't take because we were going to take it home, and the meringue wouldn't work, right?
Yeah, it would have fell. It would have fell by the time you got it home. But you can always stop back and have that some other time. I'd be glad to make it for you. But.
Well, listeners, the Capital Grille chain must be a great chain. I think this is the only one that On the Menu's ever been to. We had great confidence going in because Donato's an old friend, and is doing an absolutely wonderful job. So if you're local, be sure to go down to Pyatt Place. The wonderful part about it is there's valet parking right outside, no charge. So it's wonderfully convenient. Capital Grille is obviously setting new standards in steak dining nationwide, in line with the trend. I think there's a big trend out there, isn't there, sweetheart?
Yeah, everybody's into
steakhouses. Steakhouses are coming back.
Now that they ever left.
the quality of product Capital Grille is putting out is putting other named steakhouses, shall we say, without naming them particularly, is putting them to shame and denial. So we congratulate you on what you're doing here. We wish you every success. And we understand, listeners, that it's a tough ticket, so get your reservations in ahead of time so you'll not be disappointed.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you, Donato.
I appreciate it. And please come back anytime.
We will. We certainly will.
Great to talk to you. I know you've got guests, so go back and take care of them.
Thank you. Ciao. Have a good evening.
Bye, Donato.
Bye.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. Don't forget to check out our website and also email us at any time telling us what your thoughts are. The website is
www.onthemenuradio.com.
Right. Thank you.
And the email address is onthemenu@onthemenuradio.com. And we have a fascinating guest. We cover the globe, we cover the planet, but we also cover
some of the smaller
states in the union.
You know, I think that state's becoming one of my most favorites. What a niche they have established for specialty foods. It seems like almost every program, we're discussing a product or a book, and the people are from Vermont. Hello, David. Peter,
hello.
Do you want to introduce?
David Racklin is the current CEO and president of a company that used to be called something else, but it's now called Vermont Spoon Dance Creamery. And then there's a Woodstock Water Buffalo company, which is separate again, so I'm sure David can explain that. And we also have Director of Marketing Carrie Clifford on the line as well. Welcome both to the program.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hello. I think your product is really extraordinary. I'm a plain yogurt person. So I just, I loved it. I loved the whole full flavor of the plain yogurt. And I hesitate. Well, I don't do fruit in yogurt very often or very well. So, but I ventured to try that too. And I was enthralled. I finished all but one at this point because it's not dead sweet.
Right. We've tried to keep it, the flavor more subtle and not as super sweet as some yogurts tend to be these days.
And it tends to taste very healthful. But let's back up. How did you people end up in Vermont raising water buffalo and making yogurt and mozzarella?
Well, the company was started by another gentleman named David, David Muller, who actually made a fortune in high tech and went to Italy and fell in love with probably the best-known product made with buffalo milk, and that is mozzarella di bufala, and really started this company with the idea of making buffalo mozzarella kind of as a hobby. But he put really quite a lot into it in terms of assembling the herd and building a creamery, and then serendipitously discovered that water buffalo milk makes amazingly thick yogurt. And so it grew from there.
Now, how do you describe buffalo milk?
Well, I really describe it as like half and half. The taste profile is really just like cow milk, perhaps a little bit sweeter. There are absolutely none of those kind of barnyardy or gamey notes that you get from sheep's milk or goat's milk. It's really just like cow milk with an amazing amount of butter fat in it, really, just the cream.
Oh, boy, David, how many calories am I eating here?
Well, I hope that you're eating our new Vermont Spoon Dance Creamery low-fat yogurt.
I'm not.
Well, then if you're concerned about calories, that would be the one to go for. But
okay.
Water buffalo milk does have about double the amount of cream as cow milk.
Now you tell me.
So what you're eating is really like a high-test whole milk yogurt.
Okay.
What we are absolutely thrilled about is what an amazingly thick and indulgent and healthy low-fat yogurt we make with our water buffalo. You really have to try that. That's what's right new on the market right now, going around the country in natural grocers.
Now, give our listeners some idea of the quantity of your herd. I mean, the numbers.
Sure. Well, we have about 620 female water buffalo here in Vermont, and a small number of males.
Yeah. Ooh la la. That's
yeah, very
another
happy.
Story. Very happy males.
Bulls. And we're milking about 230 right now, and the rest are baby calves and younger stock that will come into maturity and milking in the next few years, and that's how we'll continue to grow.
Now, did they originally come from Italy, David?
Water buffalo are not indigenous to Italy.
No, I just wondered where you got yours from.
We get the genetics from Italy. In fact, the animals that we have were all imported to the U.S. from Southeast Asia. I don't know if we have any that came from Italy, but it was all before there were issues about importing any ruminant animals. So in the 1970s, animals were imported. We are actually increasing the amount of Italian genetics in our herd.
Come to think of it, how did they get from Southeast Asia to Italy? I never asked anybody.
Actually, what I've read is that it was the Crusaders who brought the water buffalo to Italy from their various expeditions in India and Southeast Asia. I think in particular India.
Well, that makes sense. There's a little piece of history for you.
But why would they like the climate in Vermont?
Well, while they're indigenous to warm climates, they adapt just like any dairy cow adapts. They're not indigenous to cold climates either, dairy cows, but they are able to adapt to the cold weather very well. They're a ruminant animal, as David was saying. That means they give off a lot of heat, and, you know, of course, we do keep them in the barns in the cold during the coldest months of the year.
So are they naturally raised? I mean, do you do antibiotics and things?
No, we really run our herd as an absolutely natural RBGH-free herd. People often ask us if we are organic, and
well,
we are not, just simply because the cost of organic...
Oh, yeah, that's going out. Nobody cares much about that now at this point. What do you feed them?
Their diet is primarily forage. It's what we call haylage. It's hay that is not all dried out, but hay that's a little bit moist and fermented, and there's a small amount of grain in the ration, a very small amount of grain compared to a dairy cow. The water buffalo really thrive on really kind of a low-grade forage diet.
Well, that's why they're ruminants, right?
Yeah, but even more so than a dairy cow, they can consume a higher fiber diet.
Uh-huh. What about water? Why are they called water buffalo? Do they live in water, too?
I guess in the native environment they do. I mean,
right, because they are indigenous to these warm climates, they are often found there wallowing in water as a cooling mechanism.
I see.
And what's unique about the milk, going back to it, is the high level of cream and also the other solids in milk, which makes the yogurt so amazingly thick.
It is fabulous.
Comes out in much lower volumes than a typical dairy cow, which puts out about anywhere between 70 to 80 pounds of milk per head per day is a modern Holstein. And a water buffalo is really a very primitive in terms of not having been bred for high volume production. It puts out a very high quality of milk, a much lower volume, about 10 pounds per head.
Oh, wow. You're going to need all the water buffalo you can get, huh?
Yes, that's right.
Now, how did you become such an expert in water buffalo, David? I mean, it's not... were you a dairy man before?
Not on the animal husbandry side, but I have been in dairy for a long time. I had the good fortune to have run the Boursin cheese business in North America, and also I ran it worldwide from France. I then came to Vermont to run Ben & Jerry's international business before discovering this unique opportunity. And I've learned about water buffalo from Carrie and from Kent. Kent is our director of dairy operations, who is really the foremost expert on water buffalo dairy husbandry here in these Americas.
David, did you miss my question, since you have a background with Ben & Jerry's? What about making it into ice cream if it's so rich and thick?
Well, thank you for suggesting that. That is actually in development, and I'm also proud to tell you that we have a wonderful director of manufacturing here who ran every plant that Ben & Jerry's ever built, and we are making the most amazing ice cream, and we can't wait to bring it to market.
Oh, I can't wait to taste it.
Under the Vermont Spoon Dance Creamery brand. That will be coming this summer, available for initially in Vermont only, so you have to come to Vermont to get it.
Well, you know, I really have been talking about a friend of ours who has a house in Vermont about having a massive party, getting together all the specialty food people we've interviewed.
That would be great.
Yeah, and I love the Vermont Cheese Company. Mm-hmm. You know them?
Vermont Butter and Cheese?
Yes.
Yes.
Amazing
product. We know them very well. Great people, great product.
Yeah, and then we have Crescent Dragon Wagon, who wrote a book on cornbread.
The Vermont Smokehouse people, we had.
Oh, Vermont
had,
Smokehouse here.
We've, yep. had them on the program. They're,
yep, the Farmer's Diner is just a few miles down the road here.
Yes, I mean, we would have one grand party.
Yes.
Absolutely. We look forward to it.
Well, I think it's tentatively in the schedule for June of this year. So we'll be in touch when that's happening, and of course we appreciate your suggestions about where else we might go. Now, what about water buffalo butter?
Oh, that's
you're not doing that yet?
No, we're not, but what happens when we make our incredible low-fat water buffalo milk yogurt, we are separating the cream from the skim milk, and we are figuring that the highest and best uses for this amazing cream are going to be ice cream and buffalo mozzarella and additional yogurts. Butter tends to be somewhat of a commodity market, and in order to support our growing herd of water buffalo, we need to find highest and best uses.
Now, sure, somebody, sure. No, it's very sensible.
Yeah.
Well, especially since you don't get that much product.
Right.
But, I mean, I'm bad about low-fat yogurt. I mean, I'm bad about low-fat anything.
Well, I always was. I mean, look at my background, Boursin and Ben & Jerry's.
Oh, yeah.
And yogurt, in particular, is eaten on a daily basis as a health food. And people who eat a lot of yogurt are, in general, for the most part, trying to avoid fat. And that's what's so amazing about this. I really implore you to try our low-fat Spoon Dance.
Okay, so where do you get it? That's our next thing now. Tell our listeners how to order up this yogurt.
Well, right now it's available at natural food stores, so Whole Foods Market, as well as other natural food stores throughout the United States.
Okay.
Is where you can get the Vermont Spoon Dance yogurt.
And do you do it on internet ordering too?
We do not currently have internet sales.
Okay.
But is there a store locator on your website?
There is a store locator on our website. Our website is due to be launching shortly, and it's spoondancecreamery.com.
You got that, listeners? Spoondancecreamery.com. Well, I will be watching for your further developments with this ice cream package.
Great. And the Spoon Dance, the low-fat Spoon Dance yogurt is launching this January, so right now.
Oh, so I can get some now.
So it wasn't even out yet.
No, I sent you the yogurt that I sent you earlier was, those were some of the first low-fat yogurts off the line.
We're actually giving you the scoop.
They low-fat ones? We ate all of them.
I ate all the fat ones.
I did send you low-fat. I'm not sure if I even sent you.
I don't think so.
No, it is. That was the low-fat.
Was it? Oh, that was rich.
It is. It's an amazingly thick yogurt. It's thicker than your standard low-fat yogurt.
See, you didn't realize you were eating a low-fat.
I don't know. Peter's just going to check once again.
Yeah, check it. I believe I'm not sure. I may have sent you some whole milk as well as the low-fat, but I
have to tell you, we once had a cat that was grossly overweight, and the vet put it on a diet of low-fat cat food. The cat then went from one bowl of cat food a day to two bowls of cat food a day, so it ate twice as much.
Well, that is true, and I do say that, with consumers about our whole milk yogurt is that it is very satiating. So, one cup of whole milk yogurt will definitely last you.
Right.
As will our low-fat yogurt. If the product that you tried is branded Spoon Dance, that is definitely our low-fat yogurt.
Our
original whole milk yogurts are right now in transition on the shelves. They are nationally distributed in Whole Foods and other natural grocers, and the lids have been telling our users for the last couple months that we're changing our name to Vermont Spoon Dance Creamery.
Well, so, I'm reading the top of a container right now, and it says original whole milk and new low-fat varieties.
Right.
But the top says we're changing our name, Vermont Spoon Dance Creamery, water buffalo milk yogurt.
Yeah, the lid was our transitional lid, because when I sent them to you, we didn't even have the low-fat lid made yet.
So it's the front of, it's the cup itself that will tell you what product that you're
okay,
at.
And where should I look for it? I don't even know.
On the front.
On the front. Yeah. On the front. On the front, it's this one says, probiotic cultures, high in calcium, water buffalo, Vermont maple, water buffalo milk yogurt.
Okay, that's the whole milk.
Okay.
Well, that's what we got.
So
anyway, I don't mean to be picky. I had to dash out of the studio to the refrigerator to find out what was in there.
But anyhow, I just wish you all the best, and it's a fine product.
Thank you very much.
And keep us posted on the ice cream,
we'll
keep you posted on the Vermont splash party.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Great.
So goodbye to you both. Goodbye to Carrie and to David, and I think it's time to
take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And we're talking, as we want to do, about fabulous desserts. But we have a very special guest.
We talk about them more than we eat them sometimes, I think.
I know. But, I mean, I just love this book called Demolition Desserts by pastry chef Elizabeth Faulkner, who owns Citizen Cake, Citizen Cupcake, and what's the other one now?
It's called
Orson.
It's called Orson. What do you do at Orson?
Yeah, Orson's going to be our new restaurant that we're opening in February. Pretty close.
Oh, so this one's it's coming soon.
And it's going to be where?
It's on 4th and Bryant Streets in San Francisco, which is the South of Market sort of area.
Oh, that's the hot new area, right?
Sorry?
That's continuing to be a hot new area in San Francisco, too.
It was a hot new area.
A lot of residential development.
It was, remember the first time we ever went there was for the Basque restaurant.
Yeah, which I think might have moved.
Oh, you probably, I bet you went to Fringall.
Yes, we did. I love that place.
And it's actually, we're on the same street as them.
Oh, okay. Great. And we know exactly where it is.
Yeah, the owner, Gerald, sold it to the head waiter a few years back, but it's still doing great.
We like that place.
We were talking to an Australian chef called Luke Mangan a few days ago, and apparently he has a place opened in exactly the same area with some partners, I think.
I've been there, actually. It's called South.
Yeah. South, that's
is
right.
It, is it good?
It's very good, and it's a really cute little restaurant, and it's serving all Australian, New Zealand type of cuisine.
Yeah,
a lot of Southeast Asian.
We've been to some of his other restaurants in Australia. We're going to go to his new one, Glass, when we're there next month.
We did go to this mostly dessert restaurant in New York. Which shall be nameless, and we were not necessarily going to say what it was called
because we
didn't have a terribly good time. But Citizen Cake, I guess, you know what to expect.
Well, you may think that we only do cakes at Citizen Cake. And in fact, we're a restaurant, and we did a nice remodel in August. And so we have 75 seats in our restaurant and bar. And the restaurant's quite busy because we're really near the symphony and opera and ballet. So as you can imagine, in December, we just got annihilated by the Nutcracker, as we usually do.
Oh, yeah.
and then we have the patisserie that has always been part of our program, but we actually physically made a separate entrance for it. So now it's very much like going to Balthazar and Balthazar Bakery. There's two different functions going on.
I was thinking, I'd really like to hang with you. You look like a lot of fun. And your book is great.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, not only is it's kind of wacky in concept, but it's all delicious.
You know, it's my first book, so I wanted more than anything. A few years ago, I had several people asking me, when are you going to do a book? And then I've had my business now for 10 years, and to be honest, when I first started Citizen Cake, the last thing I wanted to do was write a book because I was really just trying to understand the business of everything. So about 5 years ago, I started thinking it's time to document some of this stuff because we keep coming up with new desserts, and I thought I'm going to just, you know, it'll be lost. I've got to write some stuff down and get things down that I've done in the past just so that almost historical, just saying this is desserts from a specific era. And then, of course, when you write a book for today, you modernize it for today. But just to kind of also help people really understand how a chef thinks and...
Well, explain how you deconstruct. I mean, what does this really mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's because sometimes, you know, we want to have something like a lemon meringue pie or a German chocolate cake or rice pudding or something. But maybe thinking about it in a different way, because, you know, oftentimes a successful dish, whether it's savory or sweet in a restaurant, is, you know, you have something that's somewhat familiar, and at the same time you go, but it's kind of different. It has some different nuances, and that's the beauty of the evolution of cuisine. So I wanted to show people, you know, that it's not complicated to think of a lemon meringue pie or a German chocolate cake or carrot cake.
How about cheesecake? That's a big deconstruction here.
Well, there's a good one in here, too, called Waking Up in a City That Never Sleeps, that is a version of cheesecake. And
yeah, your titles, mention some of those because they're pretty funny.
Yeah, well, so the concept is to say, okay, well, here's how I like to have cheesecake today. I don't really want to make a whole cheesecake for me and one other person at home. You know, I might want to, or maybe like you have a family of four, but having a whole cheesecake is a lot to sit around and a lot for us to eat these days. So, you know, you might feel like, oh, I better hurry up and eat that bundt cake, or I better hurry up and eat that whole lemon meringue pie. And it may not be the most healthy thing for you to eat all of it in within 2 days, you know?
Right.
So you might just want to have a little lemon meringue pie for dessert. So we say, fine, let's make lemon curd and let's make vanilla shortbread and then let's do the meringue. But let's just do it on the plate so that, you know, you don't have a bunch of finished products sitting there that you feel like you have to eat or it isn't really quite as good the next day. And that's just kind of how I like to deconstruct it and then remodel it. So it's,
yeah,
in a way,
when you have individual desserts, but you also have your composed and plated desserts.
Right, right. So it's sort of just a different way to look at how to make dessert at home. Of course, I have classic things that we're known for at Citizen Cake, the s'more brownies, Mexican wedding cookies, some of a whole line of our cupcakes, really fun stuff. And it's always looking at it like, how can I make it more exciting? I don't just accept that vanilla cupcake with pink frosting is a tasty thing.
Oh,
it's just sweet
makes
to me.
Sick,
you know?
Think of it.
So I want to just have something that's got maybe, you know, brown sugar cupcake with a caramel injection and a peanut butter chocolate frosting with salt and peanuts on top. And that's going to be like a Snicker bar, candy bar cupcake.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Now, you gave us a little
Am I making
clue.
You hungry yet?
No, you gave us a little clue in the middle there. You've partly answered my next question, Elizabeth. Is this book intended to be for your colleagues who are professional chefs, or is it intended to be for someone who cooks at home who is about as skilled as I am, which is not very?
It's actually really intended for somebody at home. I think that some of my colleagues might find some of the points or the sort of different style of it interesting. I know they find it interesting because it's, you know, presented with this anime character. And
explain Karemi.
Yeah, the anime character, Karemi Keiki is her name. She's another character in the book that is Japanese, like Japanese inspired. So she and I have dialogue, and she might ask me questions that somebody at home might have about some baking things. She's also kind of comical and kind of like the way a lot of pastry chefs are anyway. You have to have a sense of humor to be a patient person in the kitchen. Yeah. And she also wants to make dessert sculptures that are much larger than life. So she's really named after the famous pastry chef Karem, who also was known for that.
Yeah. Here's a chocolate tart named Desire. You have fun with your titles. Here's the tiramisu sushi. That's pretty funny.
And it says in there's no fish involved. Don't be scared.
But
the point is that we also put in this minimalist version, usually alongside of every recipe, so that if you feel like, gosh, Elizabeth, this has got some of the desserts are asking a lot out of the home baker, saying, you know, this has six components. And it oftentimes it's really just one of those components might be fruit or something that you don't really have to alter. But if you're like, well, I don't really have time to do all that, then, you know, I have just like, you know, the lemon curd and the cookie, and that together alone would be a really great dessert, and it's not hard to make. Or if you just want to make, you know, something like the Concord Grape Tapioca in the Concord Express, and you don't want to make the caramel corn, or maybe you just want to make the caramel corn. I mean, all those components are really good items by themselves. And then we go into, like, the construction zone, meaning, and you know, some of the core recipes too, that you can mix and match some of these things, and that's how, just to get you to start thinking like how you would compose something yourself.
Now you have a segment here on ingredients, power tools, and other equipment.
Mm-hmm.
People might be surprised that you actually paint with chocolate.
Well, they might be, but it might be kind of, I look at this book like I'm trying to give you some baking freedom. I feel like a lot of people come up and say, I'm too scared to bake. It's so scientific. Don't you have to be more scientific and exacting than cooking? And my point is that, like, let's go at this from a different approach. Let's look at it like an artist would. Let's think, hey, why not use some of these other tools? You know, a blowtorch is a fun tool that not everybody has in their kitchen, but you'd be surprised how many people do have those little gadgets at home. And and some of it's just, you know, using a bench scraper a different way, or that's not really saying you've got to go out and buy a bunch of different tools, but like a mortar and pestle is just a fantastic tool. It's actually a lot cheaper than even a Futzer. And it's a really great sort of rustic way of pounding spices and extracting the most flavor out of them.
Now,
it's visceral.
Why did you devote this long chapter to a study in chocolate chip cookies?
Oh, yes. Well, I actually was just over at our city hall here today in San Francisco, and because our mayor's getting inaugurated for a second term. And there was a gentleman who's running for Board of Supervisors who said, I just love your chocolate chip cookies. I'm a chocolate chip cookie fiend. And I was like, so am I. And I said, you know, you got to read this chocolate chip cookie chapter. And he's like, oh, I know. It's great. And because I grew up in the 80s in Los Angeles area when we had the sort of explosion of Famous Amos, Mrs. Fields, David's Cookies I was really fond of. We had one of those down south, and also that I knew that they came from New York. And I just loved the whole sort of warm cookie concept back then, but often felt like some little details were missing, and some, you know, like some of them needed more salt, some of them could have used a different sugar, and I was very critical about it at a young age. So I started making my own recipes, and then eventually it just became sort of a very signature thing for me. I really do like making chocolate chip cookies as a grounding sort of home thing that I do all the time, and I really just love that combination of dark chocolate and brown sugar and just the right amount of salt and vanilla. And so I really am an obsessed chocolate chip cookie person.
Okay. And when did you decide to be a pastry chef specifically?
Oh, when I graduated from college, I studied experimental film in school. And then, so I was working in a production company pretty much during the day. It was a desk job. And a lot of my friends were like, oh, you're such a good cook. You should do that. I ended up waiting tables for like a month part-time because they wouldn't hire me in the kitchen because I had no experience. And then I heard about a nighttime plating and dishwashing job at a really small little French cafe downtown and just took that on for some extra cash. But then it really clicked for me, and I just loved the drama and theater of the sort of being in a bustling restaurant or bistro. And then I took over the chef position about a month later. So it was just sort of a circumstance. I mean, it was, and I just loved it. And I just kind of threw myself into it. So when I decided to really focus on pastry, it was when after I had staged at a restaurant called Masa's. And when I heard about a pastry opening there, I just sort of grabbed that and thought, you know, the pastry chef is not getting a loud enough voice, and I can probably be that voice.
Well, everybody says that the reason that pastry chefs are frequently women is because women have more patience, and pastry makes you have to be patient.
It certainly teaches you to be patient, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm just looking at this cartoon. I can't stop looking at these. About your about the real McCoy sandwich. And then you say, where can I get chocolate spray paint? I want to start tagging with chocolate. Wouldn't that be super cool? Maybe it's our own sense of humor here.
It's kind of the, you know, when you look at her, it's almost like looking at our pastry world or culinary world through a child's eyes. You know, it's like having fun. I think you have to have that, especially in the dessert department. It brings out the kid in everybody. So if you're the Willy Wonka, you know, you're looking at stuff constantly through kids' eyes.
Well, I mean, I just think that this book is just wonderful. As I said, I'm keeping it, And listeners, she has a lineup. All my favorite people are on the back cover endorsing this book. Now, from Dory Greenspan, who we've also interviewed on the menu. Her book's very good, too, Elizabeth.
Oh, I love it.
Oh,
and I know Dory, yeah.
Yeah, and I kept that one, too. And Mario Batali to Robin Williams and Robert Steinberg and Tracy Dajon. Pardon?
I just love Robert Steinberg. You know, he's the founder of Scharfenberger Chocolate.
I know, which unfortunately sold to Hershey.
Well, but they're still making the delicious Scharfenberger Chocolate, so yeah. And we're still using it.
And he got good
money. Is it as good as ever?
It's as good as ever.
We heard from a mutual friend that he just he said they kept on offering me more and more and more and more money, and he finally said I just had to give in.
Well, I mean, you know, one would do that, I think.
Yeah, well, there's another one who's the other guy who just sold out.
I don't know. I remember Scharfenberger. I think it was $75 million.
Yeah, there
or
was a much
like
smaller one. I can't think of his name.
Well,
it's a man,
how would you be able? To
oh, you're talking about Joseph Schmidt.
No, it wasn't
maybe.
Him.
He sold his company, Joseph Schmidt Chocolates, to Hershey as well. You know, but this is what happens in the United States, and it's not a bad thing. I know that a lot of people in our backyard in San Francisco get frustrated by big businesses taking over smaller businesses. But, you know, if the price is right, that's part of the American dream, too. You know?
I guess so.
Yeah.
Well, listen, is there any other last word you want to say here? I'm delighted with the book. I'm delighted with you.
Thank you. Well, I'd love to hang out with you one of these days.
Yeah, and I want to hang out with you. You and Karemi.
Yeah.
And the book is available, of course, on the menu radio.com under OTM bookshelf and click on and you can just order it right there. I think everybody should order it.
Yes.
You'll have fun and it's such a good book.
And Elizabeth, stay with us for a second. We're going to take a break now, but if you could hang on the phone, that would be great. And
absolutely.
We are going to
take a break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. We're having a sweet experience, which is actually pickled, which is not sweet. But our guest on the line is Jim McSweet. Do you want to introduce Jim, Peter?
Sure. Well, I don't know how we met Jim, but I think we read about his product because he's at the various fancy food shows, and we picked this out, and we said, you know, we like pickles generally, but we especially like pickled onions, and he was a man who was making cocktail onions that were supposed to be really splendid, so we said, well, we just have to have one of those, and it turns out that we got in on a piece of history when we did that because the McSweet Enterprise is bigger than that, but it started out in a very unusual way. Jim, tell us how you got started with us.
Well, I came in about 1999 with a product. The originator was a friend of mine, Leo McIntyre, who had been a country club manager back in the 1940s and 50s in Los Angeles and various other cities around the country. And he had a lot of Hollywood clientele like Roy Rogers and Hedda Hopper, Raymond Burr, and so on. And he was looking for a good cocktail onion here up in the Pacific Northwest. Wasn't able to find a sweet one, and he decided to create his own and worked on it for a couple of years and brought it to the local market, and it was very well accepted into hotel bars and restaurants and one of our gourmet supermarket chains. And he asked me to set up a website in 1999, and I did that and continued to do mail order till he retired in 2003, and since that time I've added several other pickled vegetable items to our line.
Now, you had another life and day job. You want to talk about that?
Well, I had a video production business where I did film transfers and so on. Had had some food business experience back in the 1980s when I had worked with a startup instant coffee company in Melbourne, Australia, and so had, worked in supermarket demos and, you know, the whole variety of distribution. So I had some knowledge of how that worked, and that was very helpful to me in getting our items started here in the Western Washington market.
I might add, listeners, that we endlessly have these revelations, and it turns out that Jim was most likely in Melbourne exactly the same time when we were in Geelong, which is about an hour away in Australia.
Yeah, but you got to there as a teacher. I mean, Jim, have you decided what you want to do with the rest of your life yet?
Well, it's a journey of self-discovery, and you just take each adventure as it comes along.
This is all McSweet Pickled Gourmet, subtitled Extraordinary Fresh Pickled Vegetables. Do you want to just run through your line? And I'm going to start by saying that the pickled garlic is one of the most fabulous things I've ever had.
Oh, great. The pickled cocktail onions are pretty much medium pearl onions in size, and they're in our signature sweet brine so that there's not a great vinegar bite to them. Very smooth as either an appetizer or garnish in a cocktail. And the garlic is similar. The difference there is there's a little bit of red pepper in the brine, and it gives a nice little little bit of a bite to it, so that people that like a little bit of heat or spice in their pickles, it's quite good. Our third product is our gourmet olive bliss, and this was a grand prize winner here in Bellevue, home of Microsoft. There was a holiday recipe contest, and it won the grand prize, and I teamed up with the lady who created it. It consists of five different French gourmet olives in a 10 herbal oil marinade, and it makes a terrific hors d'oeuvre tray item for any kind of dinner party or a hostess gift, anything like that.
Did we finish those off also?
I don't think we started them yet. But they're next up now. They're intended as an accompaniment, or can you use them in cocktails too?
Well, they do have pits, so they're probably not really a cocktail item. They're more of an appetizer.
Oh, good warning, Jim.
good with wine and cheese and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
and,
in general, your items are four drinks as garniture, but also four antipasto trays.
Correct.
Right.
And then just here in late August, we packed for the first time a sweet pickled green bean, which we sold out at the end of November, and looking forward to doing a lot more of that. It turned out to be our most popular product here at several Christmas shows that we did. And again, it's in a dill brine with chopped garlic. And I also have just done a pickled jardiniera with six different mixed vegetables, including red peppers, green beans, garlic, celery, carrots, and red pepper. And that was also quite popular. So we've got some other ideas, probably doing some new items too come this summer.
Any idea what they might be?
Well, probably looking at doing some asparagus and
possibly
some red beets.
Oh, beets would be terrific.
Got some other things too.
McSweet beets, there you go. That's it.
Well, very clearly, this is just by way of for listeners' information, but the reason that these items are so popular is that there isn't sort of an original edge to it, and I'm not sure why, but it's real high quality with sort of, you're not going to find this edge in other pickles.
Well, that's been our niche, sort of making the absolute tastiest, smoothest tasting pickles, and trying to make people understand how different they are and how wonderful they taste. That's why these shows are so good for us, where we can set the sample trays out and people can really compare them to other things that they've had.
Have you ever thought of doing the product which I lust after the most, but which you can only get in, as far as I know, in England, which is the large brown pickled onions?
Well, several people have mentioned those to me, and I actually do have some sample jars here. And, it's certainly a consideration. And I just have to find out where I can source those sort of onions, I guess, and then work on the R&D to make them so that people... to the degree that people, because I've never really had them before myself, so
they're wonderful.
Going to be starting from scratch.
Yeah, we just got back from the UK, and I gorged in those too.
Uh-huh. And they're probably available in every supermarket, and most pubs, and
They are. The difficulty is, by the time they get here fully exported, we found that the quality seems to have gone off, and they get soft, uh-huh. and they're just not the same thing.
Yeah.
And so we
and the
need
ones you buy in England are nice and crunchy and fresh.
Absolutely beautifully crunchy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
of course very vinegary because that's the style.
Uh huh.
Now, you sometimes produce these products yourself. Sometimes you outsource them. You're always looking for new things. Would it be correct to suggest to listeners that if they have some fabulous pickle recipe,
absolutely.
They should contact you?
Oh, absolutely.
And how would they do that?
For something new. Mm-hmm.
So, listeners, if you have some family recipe or some great creation that you think would make fit into this family of products, go on the internet and email. Are you going to give us an address?
The address is jmcsweet@comcast.net, and the website is www.mcsweet.com.
And you can also order right off the website.
Yeah, there's an order page there and number of pages discussing the different products and customer lists where you can get them. Most of our business still here is in the Pacific Northwest in several supermarket chains and so on, but I'm looking to expand regionally down the coast of California, and then, you know, as time goes on, back east. I'm working on several inquiries right now in the New England area especially, so I'm hopeful that we can move our products nationally.
Well, it's a fine product. I wanted to ask you about, there is sugar in this product. When I do, if I have 8 pieces of pickled garlic, I mean, how many calories am I consuming?
She did that once.
Not too closely, but on the jar here.
I'm sorry to throw that one at you, but I've been worried about it. Most people don't eat 8 cloves of pickled garlic.
and I'm having trouble here without my glasses.
No, that's a bad move, right?
Yeah. And I can't. I'm.
Well, when you think of it, let me know. I mean, most people wouldn't care about it. I just figure if I'm going to be eating in excess, I should know.
I believe from what it says here on the garlic that it's 7 grams for 7 pieces. So it's probably about a gram of sugar per clove. I think is a rough estimation.
Uh-huh.
And it probably is somewhat of an issue with people that are diabetic and that kind of thing. So. It's something that people have to be aware of.
Okay.
But it hasn't certainly been my customers.
Well,
the ultimate cocktail preparation, I think, is a thread that consists of opposite pieces of pickled onion and garlic. And sure spices up a martini.
Oh, definitely.
And everyone should have a little spice in their martini. Obviously, Jim thinks that. Jim, we wish you every success. Will we run across you at the Fancy Food Show in New York?
I'm not sure right at this time.
Okay.
I don't have plans to be there at this time, but things could change depending on what develops in the next few months.
Well, you must keep in touch with us and let us know as you launch new products so that we can put them on the website and people can know that they're out there. The green beans are out right now, but green beans might be coming back. And
as soon as they are, of course, I'll put them up on the website so
wonderful.
That people can check those out and place an order.
Well, if you think of it, send us a note and we'll make sure that it's up on the news page of onthemenuradio.com so that there'll be a trigger there as well so that people don't have to keep checking back.
Okay, will do.
Now, Jim, good talking to you.
Well, it's been great talking to
you. Yeah, and we especially appreciate the fact that we changed the interview time about 3 times. we're glad we were able to capture you for the program. Keep up the great work. And a last thought for our listeners, Jim?
Well, feel free to check out our website and see what our pickled vegetables are all about. And we hope to see you sometime at one of our shows.
All right. So now,
enjoy all the gourmet food that you folks have to offer.
Well, anyhow, I think that this has been a pleasure, and I'm going to go get some more cloves of pickled garlic to get me through the day.
So Anne goes off to get more garlic to see you through the rest of the day, listeners.
I think it's time that we wrap this show and look forward to next week.
And we hope we'll see you and listen to you same time, same place.
Bye-bye.